Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Welcome to AI Named This Show. I'm Tasia Custody.
And I'm Tristan Jutra.
And we are your human hosts. On this week's episode, was ChatGPT tricked by the New York Times? And the best AI from CES 2024. Ahoy to our listeners in Slovakia.
Love it.
Tristan, we're conquering the globe.
Tasia, did you know that with the invention of the telephone, that hello as a greeting wasn't necessarily a sure thing? A lot of people were going with ahoy hoy, like Mr. Burns
like
on The
Mr.
Simpsons.
Mr. Burns. Well, see, we've known all along that we were going to have a wonderful listener base in Slovakia. So ahoy to you all. And Tristan, without further ado, because we got a lot to cover today, ChatGPT, this is so exciting. The GPT store is now live. So tell us, what can we expect from the GPT store?
Well, as we teased at last week's episode of AI Named This Show, OpenAI has finally launched the GPT store, which features a diverse range of GPTs developed by its partners and the community. So you can browse and popular and trending GPTs on the community leaderboard with categories like image creation, writing, research, programming, education, and lifestyle. Of course, there's going to be new featured GPTs every week. And some of their first featured GPTs include personalized trail recommendations from all trails, search and synthesize results from 200 million academic papers with one called Consensus, or you can expand your coding skills with Khan Academy's Code Tutor. You can design presentations or social posts with Canva, find your next read with books, and learn math and science anytime, anywhere with the CK12 Flexi AI Tutor, which rolls right off of the tongue. So if you have a look in the GPT store, they have a number that ones that OpenAI have developed themselves, which have been there for a while in some form or another, but they keep adding to them. But now we see all of the community ones starting to appear. One of the ones that I was playing with I thought was quite fun was the coloring book generator. So I can make a coloring book featuring our collie and his cousin. Aww. And his cousin's kitty cat. But again, with all things ChatGPT, sometimes your mileage may vary because it did things pretty well. And then I asked it to make a tweak. And then all of a sudden, instead of doing two dogs and a cat, it did two cats and a dog. It's like, well,
the future of publishing.
You lost the plot. So, yeah, and now, of course, you can go and hit the create button and design your own custom GPTs like you've been able to do for a couple of months now. But now you not only share them with your friends privately like you've been able to, you can submit them for inclusion to the GPT store.
Oh, look at that cute little image.
But it's wrong. It shouldn't be two cats and a dog. It should be two dogs and a cat.
So cute either way.
There are steps on how to do all this on OpenAI's website at openai.com.
Well, that's not the only news that I have for you today. Because do you remember last week, so long ago, when we talked about the New York Times suing OpenAI and Microsoft for copyright infringement? And we wondered what was going to come of it and what OpenAI would say. Well, they've released a statement. And you may not believe this, Tristan, but they are claiming that the New York Times tricked ChatGPT into copying its articles. So we'll get into how in a second. But in a blog post, OpenAI said that the New York Times is not telling the full story. So
dun, dun, dun.
If you recall, New York Times is claiming that ChatGPT reproduced Times stories verbatim, like they just fully copied them. Well, OpenAI is arguing that the Times obviously had manipulated prompts to include regurgitated excerpts from articles. And they said, quote, "Even when using such prompts, our models don't typically behave the way the New York Times insinuates, which suggests they either instructed the model to regurgitate or cherry-picked their examples from many attempts."
You don't say.
I mean, the gloves are off.
The media cherry-picking facts? That doesn't sound like
say
them.
Say what? So OpenAI, they also say that they attempted to reduce regurgitation from its large language models and that the Times refused to share examples of this supposed reproduction before filing their lawsuit. It said the verbatim examples, quote, "appear to be from year-old articles that have proliferated on multiple third-party websites." Now, OpenAI did admit that it took down a ChatGPT feature called Browse that unintentionally reproduced content. But they maintain its longstanding position that in order for these AI models to learn and grow and solve new problems, they need to access, quote, "the enormous aggregate of human knowledge." And obviously, OpenAI believes that this training of this AI model with data from the internet falls under fair use rules that allow the repurposing of copyrighted works. Now, it is important to note here that in August of 2023, they did make it possible for website owners to block its web crawlers from accessing their data.
And it's so annoying.
Yeah.
But please, go on.
Yes. And with all this said, OpenAI still has hopes to continue their negotiations with the New York Times. But I do wonder if maybe they, did the right thing or not by posting this blog, because counsel for the New York Times immediately responded to this, basically saying that this blog is an admission of guilt, and they maintain that this is not fair use. So it's kind of like they were trying to pin the blame and also say, but we're open to it, and look at all the cool stuff we're doing, and we need to use this data. But now the Times is going, you shot yourself in the foot because you really have just admitted that you are training your model on this, which I don't think that's really anything new. We kind of know that.
And it doesn't fall under current copyright laws. So that's something we didn't really get into so much last week. We focused a lot of our conversation last week on potential remedies, the calculation of compensation for publishers, intellectual property owners, and whatnot, especially as regards the generation of output that leans heavily into those things, or perhaps even in the inclusion in trading data. But that a lot of that is voluntary, quite honestly, under current law. Training AI models on existing content out there doesn't fall under copyright law. It is, by current interpretations, does fall under fair use. And of course, that is what the New York Times is contesting. Google tested this several years ago when they had their book scanning project, because what they were doing is scanning all the books so that you could find content easily and quickly, but they were not reproducing the books in whole or making it easy for people to simply download the books or anything like that. It was to find little snippets for research purposes and whatnot. And then, of course, as someone who is using that information, you would still want to be citing the original works in an appropriate way. And I think the same would hold true here as well. Now, the additional wrinkle that you mentioned with how they managed to get ChatGPT to simply regurgitate virtually an entire article. Well, there's a couple of things at play there. One is that you mentioned that same article had proliferated around the web, and so it was on multiple sites. So the training model didn't necessarily know that, oh yeah, this is something that's just New York Times only. This is general knowledge that's on the web per se. And perhaps through some sort of tagging or provenance measures, you know, the source could be properly attributed, or the LLM could just identify that through bylines and the like. And we see this, like, there will be paywalled articles from the New York Times and others that get copied and pasted onto other websites. And that's a thing. And people are throwing up ads against that kind of stuff. In order to get ChatGPT to regurgitate the entire article, what the New York Times didn't admit at first was that they basically copied and pasted like a good portion. It was like at least a third, if not half, of the article into ChatGPT, and then just said, basically, go. And then, of course, because it's a probabilistic model, it's going to try to figure out, well, what are the next words that should follow? Well, because it had seen those several paragraphs of text before out on the open web, well, yeah, it's just going to like fill in the blanks. It's like Mad Libs, except the entire Mad Lib is the remaining paragraphs. That's not how people use ChatGPT. This is an artificial construct to try and create a gotcha type of situation.
And so OpenAI calls them out on it.
Yeah. This is not a slam dunk by the New York Times by any stretch, but I think this is all going to lead to some sort of negotiation eventually and the like. Not to mention the fact that the whole opt-out option is there for publishers. And frankly, that is super annoying if you are trying to do research and use some of these tools to, you know, find articles on similar topics and like find some of the highlights, include citations. But some of them will say, oh, sorry, this is not accessible due to the website's policies. Kind of like you would do with robots.txt if you didn't want Google to index or crawl and or index your website, which all you're doing is making it harder for people to find your stuff and or link to you in citations if they're doing their job properly. A lot of this is a human behavior problem in terms of citations, plagiarism, etc. I mean, that's been in the news the last few weeks. It's not really the tool problem. So sure, opt out if you want, but I think in some ways that's going to limit the visibility of your source content. And ultimately, it's going to harm the utility of these tools, which I think that's the end game for some of these publishers. They want to harm the utility of LLMs until they get paid what they basically deem that they're worth. But in the meantime, Apple, who many have accused of kind of being behind in the whole modern AI race, as you know, with respect to public-facing stuff like LLMs, image generation models and whatnot, while they've been, you know, doing their own stuff with image processing and AI neural engines, you know, on their chips and whatnot, they have kind of been quiet on the LLM side. As early as last spring, we heard that they'd been spending millions of dollars a day training their own large language models. But more recently, we've heard that Apple has been exploring deals with publishers. So whereas OpenAI, I mean, they're not a small company by any right, worth, you know, by some estimates as much as $90 billion. Apple is pushing a $3 trillion evaluation.
They're trying to get ahead of it. They're trying to be proactive.
So they've got some, they can throw enough money at this to catch up and make deals, be the nice guy, kind of, you know, not entirely dissimilar to maybe the early 2000s when Napster was running rampant and the music industry was suffering like crazy. Steve Jobs comes in with the iTunes store saying, hey guys, you know, hey Sony, BMG, you know, all you record labels, Warner, you're getting ripped off left, right, and center. Let's make an easy way for people to buy music. 99 cents a song, $9.99 an album, et cetera, et cetera. You know, later we had Spotify with streaming and others, and Apple finally caught up on the streaming game, but make it easy for people to do the right thing and people will pay a reasonable amount. So I think Apple is betting on a similar strategy here where, you know, they've been opening negotiations with major news and publishing organizations seeking permission to use the material in Apple's development of generative AI systems. So apparently, you know, reports are that they're pitching multi-year deals worth at least $50 million to license the archives of news articles, such as those from Condé Nast, who publishes, you know, Vogue and The New Yorker, I think Wired magazine as well, looking at NBC News and the IAC, which owns People, The Daily Beast, and Better Homes and Gardens. So, so far, it sounds like some of these companies are a little meh on the pitch. But again, if they're not you know, careful. They may end up, you know, coming back a little later on going, oh, actually, we've changed our mind. We'd like to be in there. Do you got any money left for us? And this is, these kind of deals are, seem to be much more than some of the numbers we've heard that OpenAI may have been tossing around. Like, oh, like $1 million for the New York Times. They're like, no, like, come on. We've gotten that in our couch cushions. So Apple is taking a different approach here. Again, a differentiator to maybe avoid the stain on their brand from being accused of being a plagiarizer or whatever with their own AI systems.
And Apple always gets knocked, as we say, that they're not in the game and they're so behind on the game. But didn't they kind of quietly release an open source, like multimodal LLM back in October?
Why, Tasia, maybe they did. So you may remember back in December, we were talking about, again, a kind of low-key announcement from Apple where they had mentioned a new framework called MLX and a model library called MLX Data, which were designed to run efficiently on Apple Silicon and enable generative AI applications. So how do we get some of these AI tools running efficiently on hardware, be it iPhones, iPads, you know, MacBooks Pro, et cetera? It could take a year or two, if not more, for those things to generate fruit. But one thing that apparently was missed is back in October, there was a release of an open source multimodal LLM from Apple and Columbia University. Apple's doing a lot of open source stuff right now. And this LLM was called Ferret. So at the time, the release was just for research use only, and there's no commercial license or anything like that, and it didn't receive much attention. But now Apple has announced that it has made a key breakthrough in deploying LLMs on iPhones. So tying back to the whole MLX and MLX data frameworks. So the company has released two new research papers introducing new techniques for 3D avatars. Oh boy. Memoji, here we go again. And efficient model inference. The advancements could potentially enable more immersive visual experiences, Apple Vision Pro, and allow complex AI systems to run on consumer devices such as the iPhone and iPad. And I think, did we discuss this, like what the Apple Vision Pro seems to be missing, and we've got a release date and pre-order dates and all that stuff, is the deep AI integration, because you're using your hands and like waving around in space, and you know you can use real Bluetooth keyboards and stuff if you want, but wouldn't it be really handy if you could like talk to a much smarter Siri as well and have that enabled on, you know, on systems that can run in the hardware that's just on your head and not in a mainframe or like a server farm somewhere across the cloud, which introduces latency. So all of these, this is in typical Apple fashion, they're working on all these different little pieces, the hardware side, the software side, the model side, and we'll see when it eventually starts to bear fruit.
Google, Apple's coming for you. Remember we talked about Google Nano, and we talked about, or Gemini Nano, I guess.
Gemini Nano, and, yeah, coming to an Android phone near you.
So
competition is
Apple's
great.
Apple's making moves, making money moves.
We're all running headlong into the mobile AI apocalypse.
Well, speaking of the AI apocalypse, it is CES this week, and whilst we unfortunately are too busy working our desk jobs to go to CES, we have compiled a few little picks of all the great, what we think are our favorite AI-focused picks from CES. And then, Tristan, I thought it might be fun at the end of the episode, before we leave our loyal listeners, to also give them a little, but why though? So let's do a couple of our fun picks, because it seems like AI is everywhere at CES this year. And I'd like to kick us off with a little announcement from Walmart, believe it or not. Bet you didn't see that coming, Tristan. My big pick of the day. So Walmart actually revealed kind of a handful of new products, including a couple AI-powered tools for managing product search and replenishment, as well as a new, kind of still in beta, AR social commerce platform called Shop with Friends, which I'll get to that in a second. But Walmart is launching a new generative AI search feature right now, just for iOS, that is going to allow customers to search for products by use cases instead of, say, the product name or brand name. So like as an example, on iOS, you can open up the Walmart app and you could search for things like, I don't know, 40th birthday party. instead of, say, specific items related to a birthday party, like cups, banners, snacks, accessories, and so on. So this, to me, kind of rivals also that Google's SGE, the search generative experience, where you can get kind of these more robust searches from just saying a general idea of what you want, like use case, instead of each product, which is really, really cool. So they're also going to be using this for replenishment of frequently ordered items as well. So Walmart will first test this with their Walmart in-home replenishment, and that's going to create automated online shopping carts for customers with items that they regularly order. So these items will then be delivered to either directly into the customer's fridge in their kitchen or their garage using smart lock powered in-home delivery service. So like we see this with Amazon a lot, where there's certain partnerships where the drivers can enter your garage and drop off your items for you in the garage for a bit more secure delivery. So Walmart's kind of up in their game here a little bit too. Maybe they're trying to rival and take a bite out of Amazon's pie perhaps. But the other cool thing was that they introduced this Shop with Friends. So this is an AR shopping tool that lets customers create and share virtual outfits with their friends, and then they can get feedback on their finds. So this is kind of like, think of it like the next step of the virtual try-on. You know how we've been seeing that a lot with different retailers and stuff. So kind of a cool, neat thing, because sometimes you see...
people don't want to leave their homes anymore.
Number one.
They're not used to it.
We don't want to leave the house. Why? Number two, sometimes it's hard to tell how something will look on you. And you order something and then you get it in the mail and you're like, this is horrible. And now I need to leave my home and make the physical return. So if this is done right, I think this is really, really cool. Especially the fact that the whole friends aspect. So being able to like get your friends take, like gone are the days where you need to order something. It comes to your house. Then you stand in the bathroom mirror and you take a really terrible bathroom mirror selfie. And then you send it to your friends and you're like, do you like this? Or like you're at the store physically and you're in the change room mirror, which by the way, there's skinny mirrors in those change rooms and you always look better than you do. And then you have to send a photo to your friend and say, do you like this? And then like wait for the response. Whereas this is just a way more integrated way, if it works properly. So that's my first pick, Tristan. Bet you didn't think I'd be picking a Walmart one.
What I want to know is that for the most effective use of the virtual try-on, should you take the most unflattering photo of yourself you could so that when you finally get the outfit at home, it might actually look better than you expect? Or can you do all sorts of dumb pose? Can you like do walk like Egyptian pose? And will it properly drape the clothes over your body?
Exactly.
In a realistic way? Or will it end up in nightmare fuel?
Yeah. Is it just like pasting the top on, you know, because these renderings look really good.
Like paper dolls.
Exactly. So I want to know what angles we have. Can you see from the side and from behind? And yeah, what is it going to look like when I'm sitting? Like, what does the puffy shoulder look like? You know, all exactly like what you're saying. So it's a bit of a TBD, as a lot of CES things are, but kind of excited.
One of the interesting aspects too was the whole in-store, you know, smart shopping cart thing where cameras could, you know, see what's in your cart, sort of like what Amazon had been testing in some of their stores, you know, you don't have to check out, it just automatically, you know, debits your Amazon Prime account. So I think there's a lot of ways that this could go wrong, especially if there are things they can't see in the carts, because this is relying on computer vision, not on RFID tags, which might be a bit more reliable.
Yeah, because there is a store, there might be a couple stores now in certain cities in the US that like the shopping cart itself is a smart cart and the item is kind of scanned as you put it into the cart. So it's almost like a self-checkout, but it's in your cart. So it's not relying on like a camera system like this. So that's going to be kind of interesting to see too. Like, we'll just see how long it takes for thieves to figure out how to fool the system.
I just want a shopping cart that quietly judges you as you're putting things in there. It's like, do you really need those Pringles?
You put something bad in it and it just goes, wah, wah.
It's like, oh, this is how this weekend's going for you, is it?
You might also be interested in.
Hungry man meal.
All right, TJ. So tell me what your first pick from CES 2024 is.
Well, my picks aren't nearly as ambitious or robust as yours, Teja. I'm going for the robots.
Yes.
And why not have a robot that is, from this angle at least, a little oddly shaped? Be careful not to sit on it.
Tristan's showing a photo that might be not safe for work. I don't really know how to describe it for people.
I think that's the ejection chute for yard trimmings. Let's just go with that. This is the Yarbo Multipurpose Intelligent Yard Robot. Looks like it was featured at one of the sort of extra showcases at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show down in Las Vegas. Not the main show floor. This looks like something from either Eureka Park or possibly Showstoppers. But the idea here is that we've seen like not only robot vacuums from Roomba and Samsung and others, but we've seen robot mops, but also robot lawnmowers.
Yes.
This is taking that concept to the next level. So the Yarbo Multipurpose Yard Robot System has a family of product designed to take care of nearly all your backyard tasks, including a snowblower, lawnmower, granular spreader. Not sure what that is. Is that like granular fertilizer
yes,
or something?
Yes, I believe so.
Liquid spreader and more. And the great part is docking stations. So a lot of these robot lawnmowers and vacuum cleaners, they know where to go to recharge. So, you know, nice seamless experience. So they have a website that features their family of products at yarbo.com. Big coming out party for them. Some of them look like if you zoomed out, they almost look like giant heavy industrial machinery you would see in a mining operation on an asteroid or something
like that. Shrunk down to miniatures.
Yeah, they're shrunk down and just doing some you're clearing your sidewalk of snow or mowing your lawn and all that sort of stuff. And then of course power is a big part of it, having good robust batteries. But the AI angle with these things, like it has been for years with the robot lawnmowers and vacuum cleaners, is the smarts in these devices to do things like mapping your yard, figuring out what the debris or obstacles in. Do you want the lawnmower to go over the dog poop or not? Right? Like we've seen that kind of situation with robot vacuums, and it doesn't end well, smearing stuff all across the floor. You don't want to get jam ups in your lawnmowers or snowblowers either. When to stop if you have a small child in the way.
So some of these are available for pre-order now, I think. But here's my thing with this. Even if you took this, like I know this is like the multi-purpose one that's kind of your pick that can apparently do all these things. Dude, even just an automatic snowblower, sold. Like if that,
I'm gonna need that this weekend.
Accurately maps your driveway, which by the way, driveways are probably one of the easier things to map because they're typically rectangular or square and they have somewhat a normal edge line, I guess, a straight edge line. And so like, dude, you don't have to leave your house and do any snowblowing. Honest to Pete, this is incredible. Great pick. TBD if it works.
The only thing though is, yeah, I'm always afraid someone's going to yoink it, like, well, you're not paying attention. Though,
that's
right?
And the thing.
Does it have...
I was going to ask you.
Can you have it call home? Can you track it? Do you have to pop an AirTag on it or whatever?
I'm assuming there's got to be some type of alarm system, right? Or like it won't work out of a range of your base or something because that would be... If somebody jacks it and it doesn't have the base, it should do like, I don't know, an automatic alarm or just be rendered useless, I would assume. But I assume there's tracking in there as well for you. But good grief.
So we have
cool.
So we have smarts not just in little shrunken down yard units, but also some larger vehicles too, Teja.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
My second pick, Tristan. Drum roll. It's from Volkswagen. What two odd picks I've had tonight. Walmart and Volkswagen.
Walmart and Volkswagen. You are so suburban.
Even I didn't see this coming, I gotta say. So Volkswagen says it's putting ChatGPT in their cars. Whether you want it or not. So they're planning to install ChatGPT into its entire vehicle lineup, including their electrical vehicles, their electric vehicles, their electrical.
The electrical ones you have to plug into the wall.
Right. All of their vehicles, starting in the second quarter of this year, 2024. Now, this feature is going to come to Europe first, and then there's considerations being made for U.S. customers next. So
it's okay, the European one won't be allowed to do anything because of all the regulations.
This is what I'm wondering. So it's curious to me actually why they're going to Europe first. There must have been something they've worked out, but we'll see. So they're going to be using ChatGPT to augment its IDA in-car voice assistant to enable more naturalistic communication between you and your car.
So where do you think they got IDA from? They got the ID3, the ID4. So they're just like, oh, IDA. It's the brains that is on all of these vehicles, the ID series of EVs and the other ones as well. So
see,
It's no Bixby.
Well, vehicle owners, they're saying, will be able to use this new super-powered voice assistant to control basic functions. Sure. You know, heating, air conditioning. But wouldn't it be more fun if it could answer general knowledge questions? And I will leave room for wah-wah in terms of, we know, sometimes things aren't factually accurate. So, again...
What do these markers on the road mean?
Yeah. Again, we say use at your own risk. But, you know, VW is really saying that they're hoping this provides, quote, enriching conversations, clearing up questions, interacting in intuitive language, receiving vehicle-specific information, and much more purely hands-free. By the way, in case you're wondering, no, you do not have to install any new apps. There's not going to be a need to create a new account. It's going to activate by saying, hello, IDA. Or you can just press your button on the steering wheel. And if you are worried about data security, Volkswagen claims that questions and answers are deleted immediately to ensure the highest possible level of data protection, which is good, but also annoying if you were actually going to use it and you wanted like your chat history. I don't know how that's going to work, but they're saying it's able to integrate OpenAI because of, is it Cerence? I think I'm saying that right. But this is like a third party software that makes automotive grade ChatGPT integrations, basically. So that's what they're using to get ChatGPT into their vehicles. So I do question if it's a need, but it is my pick because I do feel like this is the next way that all of our smart vehicles, whether autonomous or not, are going. The accuracy thing is my only reservation with it. I love it in terms of let's talk about the vehicle. And what does the vehicle need? So here's a basic use case for me that is so simple, but this is the first thing I thought of. When you get a stupid light on your dashboard and then you have to open your glove box and look through the manual and find the page and see which one of the things, because now some of the lights are for multiple things, which one of the things it indicates. So I love it for the idea of a more conversational tone to just be like, hey, why is this light on my dash? Or what does this light mean today? And then it can tell you, oh, your tire pressure, or oh, you're due for an oil change, or I don't know. I'm sad and I just felt like talking. Whatever Ida wants to say to you. But so just very simple things like that, I think I'm really, really excited for the little things, like what it could mean. Not necessarily like asking it a ton of questions. I mean, I guess if you're on a road trip, it could be helpful for asking certain questions about the destination you're going to, but it's not like you can fact check it while you're driving. So your passenger might have to do that. But I'm excited for kind of the little things. I don't know, what do you think? Do you think this is the next the next thing, like, are they just the first that's really saying, hey, we're leaning into the biggest, still arguably the biggest player in the game, which is ChatGPT. We're going to lean into it and they're going in our cars. We're not doing this third party nonsense. We're going all in.
So there's a bunch of different things going on here and a bunch of practical applications that I could see. So let's start with the practical applications, and some of which you mentioned, such as, you know, understanding what is going on in your vehicle, right? With, you know, check engine lights, other sorts of warning lights and whatnot. Cool. Getting a better in tune with how your car is operating, and then also accessing the various systems of the car, be they climate control, entertainment systems, and the like. We've even seen controversies over certain models, Tesla, having to use the touchscreen to open your glove box, which is crazy making. We've seen at the maniacal drive for simplification that so many buttons and dials are being removed from dashboards of vehicles. Now there's a bit of a backlash against that, and some vehicle makers are adding more physical controls. So there's got to be a mix there. But you don't want, I mean, there was talk at some point of putting like the turn signals, having to access that from a touchscreen, which sounds like a very bad idea and probably against most regulations around the world. But it, you know, if some automakers are going to continue down that oversimplification route, then having a voice interface to access those features might be the solution to that. So, you know, hey, Ida, or hey, Tesla, or whatever, like, open the glove box. Cool. You know, as long as it's working, right? You know, tweaking things, like I said, the climate control, entertainment system, interacting with navigation, perhaps in deeper ways that we're able to, especially with the built-in systems, and even Apple's CarPlay and Android Auto. They can do a certain amount, but there's also built-in limitations there on purpose for for safety reasons. But, like, you know, once you power the smarts of an LLM with real-time awareness of not only the, you know, the web, but the world and location and things like that, where you can say, hey, find me that EV charging station in the next 10 kilometers, preferably one that's got a washroom nearby. Like, I want to be able to ask my car that. And right now you can't, at least not in a reliable fashion. So there's all sorts of things that you could do with this. We were talking about this on our other show, Momentous Live, and Will, our guy Will, he's like, no, I don't get it. But I was like, dude, but the glove box. Yeah. What if you're in a car that you can't open the glove box? Do you want to have to use a touchscreen? So part of it is just like us thinking through and using our imagination to see how these kinds of tools can help us access information and features while keeping our eyes on the road as much as possible, which is ultimately should be the aim of a lot of these features. So the wrinkle, however, is that we've seen this tension between the automakers and the providers of software such as Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, because a lot of people prefer the latter over the former, and you have GM going their own way saying, oh, we're not going to support CarPlay and Android Auto anymore. We're going to use our built-in stuff. And we've had the CEO of Ford going, haha, good luck with that, because you're building something that people don't actually want. So what Volkswagen's doing here, and I think Volkswagen does support CarPlay in their current vehicles, but if they're what they're proposing to build into their own vehicles is more compelling for people, maybe they're just going to let the market decide, rather than taking the CarPlay and Android Auto options away from people. But what's going to happen is that you're going to see CarPlay and Android Auto by dint of their built-in assistants, being Siri and Google Assistant, getting smarter and smarter over time, fingers crossed, as they do brain transplants with those companies' respective LLM efforts. So then it's going to be, well, you've got smarter, you know, phone mirroring options from your Android phone or your iPhone, and you've got smarter cars now, but it could take a while for it to roll out. So it's going to be a bit of a race to see who can get there first, because one of the key things is the depth of integration with your vehicle's systems. And that's where the automakers have the advantage. And that's the thing that argues against things like those offered from Google and Apple. And, you know, Apple, a year and a half ago was talking about like enhanced CarPlay, you know, taking over every screen in your car. And we've seen some demos from Porsche and Aston Martin, but a lot of the other car makers are still a little skeptical. But if we can get more smarts into this and Google and Apple get way ahead of the car makers. The car makers say, fine, here's the APIs, here's the hooks to our systems, go to town. But you know, there's that option, or they're going to be more like Netflix, where you know you can't even see Netflix shows on the home screen on your Apple TV because Netflix is the you know the big player in streaming, and they're not playing ball, and it's totally user hostile experience. Not that I'm bitter. So there's different interests at work, right? People want to build loyalty with you know with IDA, and or Siri, or Google Assistant. So who's going to win, the car makers or the AI providers? And you know, Volkswagen's got an interesting approach here. They're going with one of the AI providers, and we'll see how
and
it
I'm
goes.
And I'm curious to know if it's enough for people to be like, hey, I'd get a Volkswagen because of this. You know what I mean? Like, what's the push to that? And kind of like you're saying, like, just to cap this off, I love it in terms of like the idea of it. Let's see how the execution is. In terms of simplifying and the like, because I don't want it to get more confusing. We don't need more doodads. We don't need more confusing. We want y'all focusing on the road, okay? Just that's your one job. You're driving a vehicle. So Tristan, what is your second pick?
This is going to be a bit of a quick hit. It's something that we've seen some iterations of in the market so far, but I just like where this space is going. And there's a company called WIM, which is building these it's a company called We Robotics, and they have a product called WIM. And these are kind of like partial exoskeleton type devices meant to help people walk or help them exercise in a safe and efficient manner by providing proper support. Also includes personalized AI coaching that can help enhance your exercise experience by, quote, adjusting the intensity and timing and providing customized programs. And then, of course, the data that it gathers can help with non-exercise coaching, improving your walking performance, et cetera, et cetera. So these are the sorts of systems that could analyze your gait, potentially diagnose things like, well, we've seen like with gait analysis from some of Apple's tools, like the Apple Watch, diagnose certain conditions, like neural conditions, but people who already have those diagnosed neural conditions, they could probably use a little boost in the walking and or exercising department. So this company, We Robotics, has tools that can, you know, give you lower back support, for example. They've got a number.
I'm literally using a heating pad right now as we speak.
They've got all sorts of products that they're working on in the robotics side. And again, there are other companies that have been working on this sort of stuff, making AI-powered exoskeletons to help in, like, say, factory environments, packing and shipping, providing strength just to ease up on the bodies of the workers, even in a healthcare scenario, for example. But I just wanted to draw attention to this entire field because the robotics angle is one part of it, but the AI smarts are what help make it more natural and more efficient and more in tune with the wearer's, you know, physiology and movement. So at someday we'll get to the point where we can all wear the giant mech suits like in Aliens with Sigourney Weaver. But you know, in terms of, you know, the enhancements for mobility, for support with aging populations, people who are going to live longer and longer thanks to improved healthcare, but mobility might always be there. The reduced younger workforce, so that may need some support until such point as the robots are smart enough to do everything themselves. Products like this, I think we're going to see more and more of the merging of the AI smarts with the lightweight robotic augmentation of human beings.
Very cool. And now I would like to take us from something very cool and helpful to, but why though? This is a new segment we're calling... But why though?
Why though?
So Tristan, my pick for but why though from CES this year is actually something called the Flappy AI Cat Door.
Question mark?
Question mark? But why though? So this is from a Swiss company. They have unveiled an AI-powered cat door that automatically locks if your pet tries to bring in prey it caught from the outside. So I just want to give you a quick rundown of how this works. On the side of the door that's facing the outside, there's a motion sensor and a night vision camera. And Flappy says it's compiled, you know, apparently unique and proprietary data over many, many years, sure, with a focus on diversity. but diversity in cats. So, like, lots of different kinds of cats, as well as prey.
What about cat burglars?
Right. And then they shot all this stuff off in, like, a variety of different lighting conditions. So they said that its AI-powered detection system is accurate more than 90% of the time, which I just want to point out, that means that your cat could still get a mouse inside, FYI, because...
That 10% mouse.
10%.
The real weird ones.
You know, and
they might squeak through.
There are also manual switches. So if something goes wrong, there's a manual switch on the inside of the door and you can lock and unlock it anytime you want, as well as turn off the prey detection system if you don't want it. So here's the other thing when I ask, like, why? Because the first question is this a big problem for people that it's coming into your house with it? Like, okay, maybe it is. Maybe in Switzerland it's a big problem and all these cats are bringing stuff in. I don't know. But then my second...
They're really good hunters in Switzerland. Right?
But then my second question...
All the cats get a rifle when they turn 18.
Like, I lived on a farm. I grew up on a farm. We had barn cats up the wazoo. Let me tell you, those things were so inbred and they were everywhere. And I gotta tell you, in my whole life, they might have brought one or two things. I mean, I'm talking hundreds of cats over my life that I grew up on this farm. Maybe one or two times there was something brought to the back door. I really don't... I go, why? But then my second question is, it comes in what Flappy themselves say, which is that eventually pets are likely to be trained that they can't enter when carrying something. And when they drop the prey at the door, that's going to promptly unlock so they can get inside. But so then...
Well, they learn to, like, stick their paw through the door and grab it and yoink it
in. So that's my other question. There's twofold. The one part is, so wait, your own system is going to just be null and void at some point because the cat's going to stop bringing in the prey. And then...
Mission accomplished.
Right. And then also, if the cat just runs in and sticks its paw out, it could still bring it in if this is a problem. I'd like everybody to mull on that and say, but why though? And that's my pick for you, Tristan. Flappy.
With some of these things, you wonder if they're solutions looking for problems. The one aspect of this, which is proven to be useful, that we see in some electronic cat doors already, is the part where it identifies a chip. If you've got a chip in your cat for when you've lost it, and then they can, you know, the animal rescue or some veterinarians can, you know, figure out where the cat's from because it's got a chip that's been inserted between its shoulder blades under the skin. Cool. And you can, with some of these, and a friend of the show, Jamie, his family, they have that kind of smart door where it'll only let a cat go through there that's got a chip in there. So it won't allow strange cats to come into your house.
Well, it's good for multi-pets.
Other things like raccoons.
So like our friends have a dog and a cat. The problem for them is, so they have a dog door. The problem is the cat's too smart and kept getting out the dog door. So then they upgraded the dog door so that it's only detected by a chip in his collar. So Peanut can exit and enter the door, but the cat has learned the timing of it because it stays up for a certain amount of time to, like, make sure the dog can, so it'll just, like, hear the noise and be like, and, like, it just like can go really quick to sneak out of the house. So again,
to your point, are we just training the next generation of super pets because we're giving them problems that they need to solve, whether it's pulling their prey inside or sneaking out at the right time and so on. A lot of these doors will have timers on them so they can't exit after certain times of night and the like. So this, you just sprinkle a little AI on everything and it makes it more compelling. But is it, you know, $300 compelling or cheaper with a subscription? Of course, you got to get a subscription on things. But at least they've got those couple of pricing options. Yeah, it's $3.99. Or $199 with a 2-year, $8.90 monthly subscription on the app. And then are you in the clear after that?
No, then you're still going to have to pay the monthly.
Well, you can see the videos the door records of your pet.
Well, I'm giving this a big why though out of 10.
Okay.
So, Tristan, I don't know what yours is. You never put anything in our, you haven't told me in our show notes. What is your why though pick?
Well, we would hate to interfere with tired parents as they're trying to catch up on Bridgerton or For All Mankind, whatever it is that they like to watch. So we have to have the AI AI-powered baby cry translator.
I saw this. I was so hoping that was going to be my other choice.
So we've seen over the last several decades, baby monitors of all shapes and sizes. They started with basically glorified walkie-talkies that were just in the on position from the nursery. So you could hear when baby was making noise, and then you could like desperately rush to the bedroom to make sure baby's okay, and thus training a generation of super babies to make little noises to get people to come and comfort them in the bedroom. I mean, that's the style of parenting that, you know, there's a whole discussion about that. Now we're on edge all the time, waiting for every little, you know, noise. Then they had the video versions where you could see a feed of your baby. And there's some comfort in that, especially if you have a larger house and, you know, maybe not a lot of people around. You want to get some things done and you want to, you know, keep tabs on the kid and not wait till they're screaming so loud that you can hear them from the other end of your monster home or wherever you happen to live. In you know, smaller apartments, maybe it's not as big an issue, but these types of devices tend to be targeted towards people that maybe have a bit more disposable income and maybe they've got larger homes as well. So just like with our pets, we've got a problem here that's being solved in a number of ways over time. But now with the little sprinkling of AI pixie dust, we can translate the baby's cries so that the AIs can tell you whether they're hungry, uncomfortable, tired, or in need of a diaper change.
Oh, somehow. BS.
Well, we'll see. BS, does that stand for baby poop?
They're making a bold claim here.
Well, they're using AI and machine learning to decipher an infant's needs, claiming their technology is about 95% accurate. So look at that, 5% more accurate than the
Flappy.
Prey identification for your pet door. So apparently, humans only have a 30% accuracy rating. So again, well, let's see how it goes, because what we have learned is that AI is good at pattern recognition, not only in language, but in imagery, you know, things like medical scans, diagnoses, and audio. It reminds me of the dog translator collar in the Pixar movie.
I was literally just going to say that. Okay. Like, let me guess, their second product is translating our dog's barks and sounds and whines. I just don't understand. They're claiming the technology is accurate, but like, how did you actually train the model? So unless you did this over like
torturing
20
babies.
Years and had millions of babies in that 20-year time to gather data of all the different noises and cries they make, new parents have enough bull to deal with as it is. And now they're going to have this thrown at them and think, oh, thank God, a lifeline. And I don't know, man.
You know, but these guys aren't the first. Q-Bear Plus was shown off at CES last year and even won an innovation reward.
Yeah, but does it work? You never heard about it again.
This market is heating up. But herein lies the rub. The app costs $10 a month.
Yeah. But so you only need it when the kid's a baby. Once the kid can talk.
And then you can throw it in the landfill.
And then it goes into the dump like the rest of this. So,
I mean, it's kind of fascinating in a way because of the pattern recognition of abilities of AI. And they're just going to get better and better as time goes on. We're seeing similar things with decoding neural signals. Like that story we talked about several months ago, allowing a nonverbal woman, a woman who had lost her voice, to be able to speak again because it could decode her brain signals. So it's an application of a similar sort of technology.
I just want to make that clear, the distinction here and what we're talking about.
Well, luckily, we don't have to jack into the base of baby's skull to make this work.
Oh, boy.
Let's count our blessings, shall we?
And with that, wah-wah. But why, though? We say thank you so much for listening to another episode of AI Name This Show. This was a fun one, and we would absolutely love if you would leave us a review, maybe share this out with your friends and family if you're enjoying it. That just really helps us get this show out to more people. So thank you so much for joining us.
AI and goodbye.
The DTNS family of podcasts, helping each other understand.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.